Are you guys ready to record this whole thing all over again?
I didn't care for it. I didn't buy it.
That seems pretty ridiculous.
I don't even want to think about the possibility of you having your dick out.
Yikes.
Is this the most important thing in the universe? What happened to it? I don't know.
I needed to suck in absolutely every moment of awesomeness.
Yeah. Hey guys, welcome to another fun and festive episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast, where we discuss what's happening in the world of entertainment news. I'm Justin Kavanagh, and with me as always, Mr. Randy Van Dyke.
Howdy, howdy, howdy.
Howdy, howdy, howdy. And Mr. David Evanson.
How are you doing today, everybody?
Fabulous. Randy, how are you doing?
You know, I'm full of mixed emotions because of Star Wars right now, but we'll get into that.
Sure, we can jump right in if you want. Star Wars Celebration 2020 has officially been canceled. How sad. We were expecting it in August. Well, we all knew it wasn't going to happen, but...
I'm fine too, Justin. Thanks for asking. How are you?
Randy wanted to jump right in.
I just wanted to be an asshole.
My goodness.
I almost went like, hi.
Hi.
But I'm sorry, Star Wars Celebration got canceled?
It did.
No.
There's this whole, you know, coronavirus thing that fucked it up for everybody.
It's not because there's nothing to celebrate in Star Wars right now, because it's stupid.
You were just talking about 40 years of awesomeness, and I
just did. I love Star Wars. I just wanted to be a dick.
Sounds like you hate Star Wars and you hate the fans even more. You are just the worst. Grumpy ghost.
No way. I love Star Wars. Even Rise of Skywalker. Even it's still stupid.
It's definitely interesting. Oh, man. But we were expecting it in August, August 18th to the 24th. Let's see. I thought it was in August.
It was August 27th. Through the 1st of September, or August 31st.
That's what it was. And then now the new date is going to be August 18th through the 21st, 2022.
Yeah, it's 2+ years away from right now, currently.
Right. So are you waiting in line, Randy?
Yeah, I am podcasting from in front of the Anaheim Convention Center. I have 2 years worth of rations and an all-weather tent. I think I'll be okay.
Yeah. They've done a lot of renovation down there. It's pretty nice. You'd be able to live down there.
I'll be able to create anything I need with my 3D printer, my mobile 3D printer. You know, I need a bed and pillows. I can print that out.
You need a goddamn golf cart to get from the street to the convention center, because they have that ridiculously long, like, walkway where it feels like it's close because the building's so big, but it's really like a 5-minute walk, and it seems like you're never going to get there.
Well, and not only that, it seems like every event that I've been to over there in the last 5 years, the parking structure is always under construction. Right. So you have to park a mile away across the street at Disneyland or something like that.
Some overflow.
Yeah. It's just like a parking is never convenient and it's never fun.
The construction is over and the parking is worse.
How is that even possible?
Because I think we all assumed that when they were just demolishing the structure, they were building a bigger structure. And from the outside, for the year they were building it, it looked like they were going to build a bigger structure. But no, it's just it's another wing of the convention center.
Well,
that's not good.
So let's put more assholes going there and less parking.
Yeah, that's too bad. Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, on one hand, it's frustrating. On the other hand, I love that I live close to it, so I don't really... It's a nice offset. I don't have to travel for any of the Anaheim shows.
Right.
Yeah, they really want you to park at the stadium and get shuttled in. It's kind of their thing.
All right. That makes sense, I guess. I just remember when we went to Celebration in 2015, we parked in a different place every time. It was an adventure every time. Yeah.
Toy Story parking lot.
Yeah, back then I was a Disney annual pass holder, so I was able to like park in one of the Disney lots.
Oh, there you go. Maybe that's why we parked in a different spot.
It was right across.
We had to lie though. We're like, oh, they're like, you're for the convention? Oh no, we're just going to the park.
Okay. Yeah,
you go park here.
Meanwhile, we're head to toe in Star Wars paraphernalia. It's like, don't put your badge on until we walk out of the parking lot.
It's for Star Tours.
So let me tell you, I have a little bit of a theory about this postponement, let's call it. Okay, so 2 years from now is when the next Star Wars Celebration is going to be happening. And generally, lately, they've been every 2 years anyway, right? Does that sound about right to you guys? Sometimes they'll do them every year if they've got something to celebrate, but but every year, every other year, something like that. My theory is this. There was already going to be a Star Wars celebration in 2022, and chances are it was probably already going to be Anaheim, and they already had the convention center booked and everything. They already knew it was going to happen, and they when they discovered that this year just wasn't going to pan out, wasn't going to be possible, rather than, you know, postponing it till next year or in a few months or the end of this year or whatever, they just said, you know what? We've already got another one of these shindigs planned for 2 years from now. We'll just tell everybody that, you know, we just bumped it back to that date, even though they already had it secured. That's my big theory.
I have a similar theory. My theory is that since Star Wars Celebration is hard to get into, not as hard as like San Diego, but they are giving people the option instead of canceling your tickets to just postpone it and you have your tickets for 2022. I think by making it in Anaheim in 2022, it allows them to transfer more tickets and have less cancellations. That's just my theory.
Sure.
I believe 2022 was originally going to be Orlando.
So StarWars.com did post details on how to get refunds if you so wanted to. It said fans who were planning to attend Star Wars Celebration Anaheim this year may either transfer their current ticket purchase to the new event dates, receive a refund, or receive credit for Star Wars Celebration merchandise. As a token of our appreciation and to thank all Star Wars Celebration 2020 fans who choose to transfer their tickets to 2022, we are excited to offer a free Star Wars Celebration Stormtrooper character pin for all transferred tickets.
Ooh, free pin.
Right.
Those people go nuts for the pins, man, because, you know, last year was my first year of Bandai at Star Wars Celebration, and we were one of the five vendors who had exclusive pins, and people were going nuts. They were buying this like hundreds of dollars of crap they don't want just so they could get, and ours wasn't even I shouldn't say it wasn't a good pin. Ours was the AT-AT driver, and, you know, other people had like Mace Windu and Ahsoka, but people go nuts for those pins. We sold out of those like instantly.
The AT-AT driver is the one with like the penis helmet.
No, that's AT-AT driver.
Think stormtrooper. Oh. Yeah. Think white storm, like a white type TIE fighter pilot.
Oh, okay.
That's gotcha. Yeah. Especially if you compare it to the vintage action figures, he basically looks like a white and gray TIE fighter pilot. Yeah.
Got it. Not the penis helmet.
That is the AT-AT commander or the AT-ST driver. They wear the same type of helmet, which is also the same type of helmet that Han Solo wears as an Imperial trooper in Solo. Mm-hmm. Fun story.
That's actually our pen.
Oh, that's a fun one.
Yeah, I have to open my desk, I think.
Yeah, so I mean, I was going to roll it over anyway. The free pin is just kind of bonus as far as I'm concerned. So I'll take it.
There you go.
no skin off my nose.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, and they're making it really easy to transfer over. And my theory is pulled out of nowhere because there's absolutely nothing leading me this direction. It's just like, I know how Disney works and I know how often they do these shows. And I know that they were going to be bouncing heavily between Orlando and Anaheim because they want that synergy with Galaxy's Edge. Last time we had one in Anaheim, Galaxy's Edge wasn't quite open. Last year when they did one in Orlando, it was under construction, but I don't think it was open yet. And it was just like, it was always just like, it was so close. And they were always wanting, or they actually did for Anaheim 2020 for this year, have a whole after party kind of thing that you could go to the parks, do this exclusive after hours thing that was just for people attending Celebration. And that's been canceled as well, of course. So it seems to me that they're really going to want to heavily rely on Orlando and Anaheim over the next few years, just so that they can squeeze every little bit of life they can out of Galaxy's Edge. So let's say they would have had one in Orlando in 2021 and then Anaheim in 2022. It just, you know, as long as it alternates, it doesn't throw off the schedule that much.
Sure.
Yeah, I don't think they were going to have one in 2021. I think it was going to be every 2 years, except with the 40th stuff.
Yeah, so, well, they're going to have to, now that there's one in 2022, they're going to have one in 2023 for the 40th of Return of the Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
So
do they still have the D23 thing annually? Is that a thing?
No, that's D23 is every 2 years. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But kinda if they like do 23, they'll, you know, they almost have to do, you know, 24, because that would be, you know, the 25th anniversary of Episode 1.
So there isn't going to be one this year. There'll be one next year? Because we had correct. D23 yes. last year.
We had D23 okay. last year, so there would have been one in 2021.
Got it.
So also, just to keep beating this dead tauntaun, Celebration 2022, it is going to be the 20-year anniversary of Episode 2, Attack of the Clones.
So excited. Yes.
That's the only anniversary. No, no, I shit you not. That is the only anniversary that we're going to be celebrating in 2022.
Oh, that's a good I'd rather call it.
Forgotten.
Yeah. I mean, it's the 45th anniversary of A New Hope, too.
Okay, well, that's significant. So you can look at it like that, too.
Sure. Which is arguably almost as good as Attack of the Clones.
Why don't you just say it's the 20-year anniversary of Jango Fett's death? celebrate that.
Have like an in memoriam like 20 years ago on the fateful battlefield in Geonosis.
I still think it would have been awesome if his head fell out of the helmet when Boba picked it up.
Well, you see the shadow, at least in the theatrical version, you saw the shadow. The Blu-rays, they edit out the shadow.
Oh, man. Those always with the edits. Yeah. The never-ending edits.
Well, they've ended now because Disney doesn't want to put the time or money into it, apparently.
There you go. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, Disney doesn't care.
Yeah. Well, it's not.
It was Lucas that cared.
Exactly. So while we're on the topic of Star Wars and potential rumors, do you want to talk about some Star Wars TV content?
Hey, go for it.
Can I say something real quick?
Please, yeah.
Hey, Justin, how are you today?
I'm fabulous, David. Thank you for asking. Thank you for taking the time to ask.
To grind this podcast to a halt to see how you're checking on you.
Here's the thing. When you were introduced, you said, "Hey, everybody, how you doing today?" So I'm like, "Oh, I'm good. How are you guys, Randy?" And then he was an eager little beaver to talk about the Star Wars.
All I did was say how I felt and say we will discuss it later. And you guys were like, let's talk about it now.
Yeah,
I even wrote a little bit. I was going to say, if I were more fantastic, I'd be a stretchy asshole banging Sue Storm.
Well, see, here's the thing. That would have been great, but I asked you prior to recording, what are you writing on your paper? You could have said, I have a bit planned. But you chose to keep it a secret.
I wanted to get you off guard. I didn't want you to be waiting for it. I wanted you to be like, wow, what a witty guy. Off the top of his head. Off the cusp.
I don't even know what you said other than something about a stretchy asshole.
What you said? It is. It's very elastic. It comes back.
Yikes. That's good, though. That's healthy.
No gape.
Yeah, that means you're well hydrated.
Yeah. Speaking of Mas Kanata, what were you saying, Randy?
I have been completely derailed.
You were talking about Star Wars TV.
Okay, so I heard an outlandish rumor today, and maybe it's just a rumor, or maybe there's some truth to it. But since most of what I say is just kind of random misremember pseudo facts, I'll just throw this out there and take it for what it is. It is a rumor or speculation from some rando on the internet that I happen to consume in some little bits, and I'm gonna regurgitate it with my own spin on it. All right. So I heard that there is plans to go a Game of Thrones route with the live action Star Wars Disney TV content. And
well, what does that mean? Like violence and sex and naughtiness?
I mean, I wish hasn't Star Wars already gone Game of Thrones? Like, it started out really good and then it ended poorly.
he's on fire right now.
He's full of piss and vinegar. But TV has started out really strong. I think we can all agree that The Mandalorian is regardless of your personal feelings, it is a critical hit, and it is a hit with all the old school fans and most of the new school fans too. So I mean, unilaterally, it's pretty well considered to be a success. Sure. So what they're wanting to do is kind of expand upon that. There are going to be multiple series that take place in between the original trilogy era and the sequel trilogy era, because there's a 30-year time span there that we don't know a whole hell of a lot about, other than whatever's being told to us in comic book form or novel form, that kind of thing. Mandalorian takes place 6 years after Return of the Jedi. So that is kind of like the beginning of this 30-year-long gap in time. But they're talking about the possibility of several other series that are also taking place in that span. And the cool thing is, several of these stories can overlap. They're talking about one series getting released every quarter, so that there's always going to be new live-action Star Wars content for you to look forward to on Disney+. And what they're also saying is the Kenobi series and the Cassian Andor series are going to be one-offs. They're not going to be taking place in that timeline because they both take place before A New Hope. So so those ones aren't going to have this kind of crossover potential. But David has written like a big ransom note. He's pointing at it and it says Thrawn. And yes, that gives us the opportunity for a live action continuation of Rebels, or at least some of the characters from Rebels, including Ezra and Thrawn and Ahsoka and Sabine and anybody else that was kind of off adventuring at the end of that series. There's so many possibilities, but the thing that's exciting to me about it is that rumored right now, the person to be heading up this entire endeavor is Dave Filoni. And anybody who really kind of stands strong behind the old guard for Star Wars and loves all the original content, pretty much believes that he was being groomed by Lucas himself to be his successor. And that could really pan out. That could really be true, because I think he really gets it. And we've talked about this on the show before, but this would be a great opportunity to kind of like put it into action. And the way that it correlates to Game of Thrones is, in Game of Thrones, you have one series that follows several different houses or different families. And it's just kind of like occasionally they kind of come together and cross over, but it's a lot of separate, smaller individual stories until they have a need to all focus into one goal. That's kind of how these shows are going to act, all in a separate way, so that, you know, you can consume in any little bit that appeals to you, or you can consume all of it and be part of a bigger story. Justin, looks like you have a question.
I do. Earlier, like 5 minutes ago, you said that there's a possibility of enough content to have another series every quarter. So if we're talking every 3 months, there's like no downtime. One show is going to end and another one's going to start.
Right.
Because if you're following like the 10 episode sort of arc.
Mandalorian was 8 episodes. I don't know how it's going to be in season 2 or how these other series are going to go. But if we just use that as the benchmark and say that they're all going to have 8-episode seasons, then that's basically 2 months worth of content. Right. 1 month of downtime, and then you have your next show that you're getting into. And if they continue that behind-the-scenes series that they're doing, like they have going for
Gallery. Yeah, end-to-end. That's a total bookend from quarter to quarter. Now, absolutely. do you think I feel like as all these movies were coming out from 2015 to 2020, we had what, 5 movies? That's like a movie a year, right? Is what we had, basically exactly what we experienced. Or I guess 2019 is how it ultimately played out because it was December. But I kept seeing all these, you know, tweets and blogs about too much of a good thing, and I'm tired of Star Wars. I need a break from it. Give me a chance to miss it. Do you think that this TV format is in a different category all on its own because it's not as exhausting as going to the movie theater?
I think, okay, so it's different in a couple big ways. We're digesting it in smaller chunks, and the fact that it's being released week to week rather than here's an entire 8-episode dump for us to binge means that we're going to have these water cooler discussions like we're having right now. You know, it's going to give us something kind of fun to look forward to, that, you know what, it's going to be resolved next week or in 2 weeks or 3 weeks, however long it takes us to get through this story arc. You know, we're going to be consuming it, talking about it and excited about it. We're not going to have a chance to, I don't think we're going to have a chance to really feel anything else about it. Now, is it too much? That's a good question. Now, with movies, we got used to the idea that we were getting the Skywalker Saga movies every 3 years. You know, 77, 80, 83, and then 99, 02, and 05. It was just like we had this Pavlovian response every 3 years. We expected a Star Wars movie. And things didn't change that much when you look at the Skywalker saga of the Disney era. We got it every 2 years. We just happened to get a filler movie in between each time. Now, I happen to really love and enjoy those filler movies, probably more so than the saga movies. But well, no, which isn't a bad thing, because I like all of them.
I'm in the same boat.
They're all fine, and they're all good. But for me, as a really diehard Star Wars fan, I don't really see the possibility of hitting fatigue yet. But for casual fans, I get it. For example, I'm a casual fan of Marvel. I am by no means a fanboy. And when I feel obligated to see two or three Marvel movies a year, I'm like, God, I don't really care. You know, it's like, I just show me the Avengers ones when the big bads come, and cool, I'll check that out. I'll eventually watch all of them. But I got to the point where I was experiencing Marvel fatigue, and I think that's what casual Star Wars fans might feel after this. But also look at it this way: there's not going to be any Star Wars movie content for the foreseeable future. But all we're going to get is TV content.
Right, I think they're trying to emulate the Marvel mode for Disney Plus. You know, Marvel has something like 9 shows in development right now. You know, we're going to see Loki. We're going to see, Winter Soldier and Falcon. We're going to see WandaVision, relatively soon. And then we have, She-Hulk. We have Moon Knight and Kamala Khan, Miss Marvel. We have a lot of stuff in the hopper for Marvel, and I think they want to emulate that because they have to show value for Disney Plus. You know, like you said, you'll consume all Star Wars, but Marvel's kind of like, well, I'll check it out. If I like it, maybe I'll watch it. Some people are probably the opposite way. I want to watch all the Marvel, and some of the Star Wars I'll watch. So I think that right now Disney Plus has a real content issue that I thought would have been corrected by the first year. I thought we would have seen some of the Marvel shows start to trickle in before now, but right now I know that a big concern with them has to be like, do we have enough content to warrant, because a lot of people pointed up for a year, in October when it came out, right? That year's coming up, and I know there's a lot coming, but I'll keep it because I love watching, the Star Wars movies and the Marvel movies and stuff like that. But I could see a lot of casual viewers just saying, well, I had my year, they wowed me at the beginning, they had Mandalorian. I don't think it's any coincidence that the new season of Mandalorian is coming out in October at the same time everyone's subscriptions are coming up to end. Right. So I just think they need content in Star Wars and Marvel. Even quote unquote bad Star Wars makes $1 billion.
Well, I can't even tell you what the last thing was that I watched on Disney Plus. I barely use it. It is not for me, I don't think. And I always thought I was a Disney fanboy, but going through everything, I've seen it all a billion times, and I don't need it right now. I don't know what my problem is, but I'm just not into it. And as far as Mandalorian, yeah, I know exactly. And I'm really excited about that. Like, just watching that cartoon with that gopher that terrorizes Pluto with my child is going to be one of the greatest days of my life. I just find it fascinating that, I paid for a year and I watched it in October, November, and I haven't really gone back to it. So it's definitely interesting. But talking about Mandalorian for a second, 8 episodes, I would say that there was 3 or 4 of them that I could do without. They were sort of freak of the week type episodes, and I would have preferred more of maybe a 5 episode arc where it was that sense of urgency of first when he found the child, and then giving up the child, going back to get the child, and then trying to make a getaway. That could have been a really cool 5 episode arc, and I didn't need all the filler in between.
You didn't need your cool AT-ST.
Right. Yeah, the ATSD, the prison episode, and even the episode of the Jawas and the egg and the mudhorn and all that.
Yeah,
it's pretty big to the storyline, but for the most part, had it not happened, the only thing that really would have been lost out of that is you wouldn't have seen Baby Yoda wield his massive force power so early.
Well, and a well earned Utini.
Well, yeah, I would take the Jawa episode though. I mean, I thought that was good. Jawa episode. Yeah,
I like all of
that. That was fun. And we did get to see his powers, and they sort of have that bond to where it warrants him going back for the child. But at the end of the day, when I rewatch the series, I know I'm going to be skipping a few episodes right. in the future.
Yeah, because the Java episode was probably the weakest one in my eyes. I mean, even though I love Houdini, and I'm always here for that, I will never not laugh at it. That was the episode I was just kind of least interested in. You know, it was cool when he picked up the Reek or whatever if they're calling it something new. But other than that,
the Mud Beast. Mudhorn. Mudhorn.
Looked exactly like the Reek from episode 2.
The Reek also had little horns on the sides. I looked into that because I wanted to buy a Reek figure. It's like toy that came in mm-hmm. the arena. If it was in fact the same creature, but it's not.
Mm. Reek is Theon Greyjoy from Game of Thrones. Yeah.
Can you name the other two animals in the Aegean Ocean arena, Randy Van Dyke?
Outside Akle, of Reek. Akle, yeah. And given enough time, I will remember it. But
it's a Nexu.
Nexu, there you go. That's the cat looking one.
That's the cat one, yeah.
That's the one that tears Natalie Portman's clothes off.
Yeah, that's our favorite.
Yeah. I mean, not for that reason, but I mean, it's a cool design.
Well, he didn't hurt our hero's anti-derobed, you know, Queen Amidala.
Didn't her Unleashed figure have the scrape on her side, too?
Yeah. I think so, yeah. There have been several versions of the figure that has been released that way.
Interesting.
It's a dynamic action pose.
There you go.
Corkscrew action.
Yeah. Delay, action. Yeah, I mean, I'm fine. You know, Dave Filoni has my trust. You know, he's done pretty good, and you know, he's proven that. You know, I love the Expanded Universe, and he's proven that. You know, he also has reverence for the sacred texts.
Yeah.
As Master Skywalker would say. So you know, I'm not concerned. You know, more Star Wars the better. And if these can, you know, be an extension, you know, because we know he wants to do some form of live action Ahsoka. You know, we're going to get that in The Mandalorian. If he wants to spin Rosario Dawson off into her own show that would also deal with Ezra, with it also deal with Thrawn. You know, I'm here for that.
You are making sweet sweet music over there, and I am just licking it up.
Oh my. I think you're supposed to listen to it.
I've been listening to music wrong all these years.
Yeah, and you know what? You know, you said Skywalker Saga several times, and I think looking back on episode 9, I think that was maybe the biggest misstep from a marketing perspective was to try to tie up all 9 films with it and to make that the final chapter in the Skywalker Saga. If this had just been the final chapter in the Rey Saga or the Finn Saga or the Poe Saga or the Rey Finn and Poe saga, I think it would have been received much better. I think that by trying to get those old nostalgic fans who had kind of written off the sequel trilogy to come back to check in to see how we're going to end this bastard, I think that led to the majority of the negative reactions to it.
Yeah, I agree. And that would have left the door open for, you know, 10, 11, 12. And it didn't even have to bring back any of the same original cast members. It could have taken place years later with some Skywalker descendant, you know.
Yeah, now they're going to remake 4, 5, and 6.
Dear God.
I don't think so.
People burn the House of Mouse to the ground.
Yeah, that'll be a problem.
Yeah. Oh. But I don't want to make it sound like I hate on Star Wars. Star Wars is my love. I love Star Wars to death. And of all the Disney things, I'm happy with almost everything Disney's done with Star Wars, with the exception of some of the choices in the films. All their ancillary things, their new canonical novels, you know, most of their games, you know, Galaxy's Edge at Disneyland, you know, all of that is everything I've always wanted from Star Wars. And so, you know, I'm not here to hate on the Disney.
Sure.
The new Squadron game looks kind of cool.
X-Wing
versus TIE Fighter year 2020.
Yeah. Kind
of an update on an old classic from the look of it.
Sure. 5v5. I'm all over that. It'll be fun.
Yeah, I played Rogue Squadron on the GameCube like 2 weeks ago.
Nice.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
For whatever reason, my oldest son, Luke, he has this obsession with like my old video game systems. Like, he's like, hey, let's play the GameCube. I want to play Mario Party 5. And I'm like, why don't we play like one of the 12 Mario Parties we have on the Switch or the Wii U that's already plugged in? And so we took out a bunch of the old games, and one of them that I took out was the Rogue Squadron game for GameCube, and it still holds up as a masterpiece.
I'm glad I gave it back to you. I had it in my possession for years.
I wouldn't have been able to play it if you didn't.
I know. You would have looked for it and been like, Son of a bitch!
Well, there were actually two Rogue Squadron games for the GameCube, and I had them both, so I would have had the other one still. So.
Oh, okay.
I might not even have noticed.
Random memory here. Is that the game that had like a Easter egg hidden old arcade games in it? Like you could play the Empire Strikes Back arcade game somewhere inside of that? I remember that. Mm-hmm. I remember playing it at your place.
Because I'd never played the Return of the Jedi arcade game before. So I was like, I never played this game.
That's a fun one. There was a restaurant that had it in my hometown. It's kind of cool. It was Rocky's Pizza is what it was called. Jedi arcade game. It's pretty cool.
I love the Jedi arcade game. The only place I ever remember seeing it growing up, I don't even remember seeing it at like Disneyland. They had every arcade over at the Starcade over there, but I remember seeing it at a place called Camelot near where I grew up in Anaheim, and it was a miniature golf course, family fun center kind of thing. And God, they had that thing from the mid-80s into probably the early 2000s in the exact same spot. You know, you could always predict where it was and go right to it. And I loved that game so much that when I got my first place all to myself, I actually bought one, and I still have it in my garage to this day.
Right. Justin and I can see Camelot from our desks.
Right. And there's this strawberry field in front of it, which just looks like dirt for most of the year. And I remember walking past it 1,000 times. Like, man, I should really do something with all this dirt. And then next thing you know, there's just like 50 people working in the dirt to get the strawberries. I was like, oh, shit, look at that. They followed through on my idea. They did something with the dirt.
Did they give you some form of monetary reward?
I'm just like, my idea, as I walk by.
They just threw strawberries at them.
Oh, man, it's so funny. I was like,
this is another tangent, but speaking of mini golf and family fun centers, that kind of thing, I heard Boomers went out of business. There's quite a few of those in Southern California.
Yeah, the one that's closest, because we have annual passes to Boomers because they were like super cheap, and that's what my parents got my kids for their Christmas present, or one of the Christmas presents. And the one that's closest to me on Beach Boulevard closed, or Warner closed, so.
Oh, that's the one by Tommy's.
Yeah, it used to be Bullwinkle's for the older folks.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so
that changed when kids stopped remembering or stopped knowing who Bullwinkle was.
Yeah. When Full House went off the air.
Yeah, pretty much.
That was the only thing keeping that show relevant Full House.
Well, in an era where not everybody had cable and you only had a handful of channels, you know, we all grew up. You know, that's a weird thing to think about. We all grew up in like the 80s and 90s, and probably like more than 75% of the cartoons that we watched were from like our parents' era, like the 40s through the 60s.
Right.
You know, like the classic Disney cartoons, you know, most of those are like 40s, 50s, maybe even earlier. All the Warner Brothers, Looney Tunes stuff. Yeah. That's all like 40s through the 60s.
All like the Hanna-Barbera stuff, like Looney Tunes.
Yeah,
the Hanna-Barbera
stuff. Yeah, that was like 60s that's all and like 70s, 60s, right?
Yeah. And we were consuming all that in the 80s, 90s because there wasn't much else. You know, yeah, we had the Disney Afternoon. We had new stuff coming on, mostly in the afternoon times. But, I mean, when I think about how much old stuff that we consumed then, it just blows my mind. And then when you look at it now, there is so much, there is a glut of material out there that's aimed at kids to where they don't have an appreciation for the old crap like we were forced to have because it was all we had.
Seriously. And like, what's so funny is that all those old cartoons that you were just talking about made so many pop culture references to the classics, you know, like the Casablancas and what have yous. And now it's Family Guy and Simpsons that are making fun of the movies that we watch today. And it's so funny because when Alex and I watch a movie, she's like, oh my God, there's a Family Guy bit on this. And she had no idea it was from a movie. And I find that just remarable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bugs Bunny was always Bogart. He was always, he was always, frankly, my dear, I don't give up. And he'd say something different. But
I always liked how he kissed the bad guy.
You're like Elmer Fudd?
Yeah, I just started licking his face, and it's like, all right.
Didn't
it's care. Like, I'm bad insult to injury, and I'm just going to cover your face and spit.
That's such a good weapon. Do it on the playground. That's where it's at.
Kill him with kindness.
Anyway, you guys ready to move on?
Yeah.
Did we start? For all the-
yeah. No, that's fine. Well, speaking of Warner Brothers, actually, Warner Brothers is launching DC Fandom, a mega 24-hour immersive virtual fan experience, which brings the universe of DC to life and features the stars, filmmakers, and creators behind its biggest films, TV series, games, and comics. This is coming on Saturday, August 22nd, starting at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, and it is a free virtual experience where no badge is required. It'll be lots and lots of fun.
That's fun. I have a feeling we're going to be doing a lot of this type of stuff since there is no San Diego Comic-Con this year, or really any conventions.
Sure. Just like the Strawberry Field, my idea.
No shit. There's so many. Yeah, there's so many virtual events this year. You know, every company basically that was going to have a booth at San Diego Comic-Con is like doing their own thing. You know, Funko's doing one. You know, we're doing one at Bandai. You know, DC's doing one. Marvel's going to do one. Funimation's doing one. There's just so many out there, and it's just kind of. This is why we need San Diego Comic-Con to bring everything together for one-time use. But it's exciting that the general public will be able to do it. It's not something that's going to be geo-gated. You don't have to be in the San Diego area or have a shitload of a disposable income to buy a ticket, rent a room, and fly there.
Right. It's all you can all do it from your living room with or without pants.
Yeah.
Pants optional.
Yeah, preferably without pants.
But yeah. It is pretty cool. They're saying it's accessible for, this is from the press release, accessible for 24 hours at dcfandom.com, and that website is active right now. The global event will immerse fans into the DC multiverse with new announcements from Warner Brothers games, film, and TV and comics, as well as an unprecedented opportunity to hear from the cast and creators behind your favorite feature films and TV series, including Aquaman, The Batman, Batwoman, Black Adam, Black Lightning, DC Superhero Girls, DC Legends of Tomorrow, DC Stargirl, Doom Patrol, The Flash, Harley Quinn, The Snyder Cut of Justice League, Lucifer, Pennyworth, Shazam, The Suicide Squad, Supergirl, Superman and Lois, Teen Titans Go, Titans, Watchmen, Young Justice, Outsiders, and coming this fall to theaters worldwide, Wonder Woman 1984. That's a lot. That is, in fact, 24 hours of content, and bless their hearts for that.
and before we take the deep dive into Suicide Squad that we will inevitably do in a second, because I can't wait to hear some blasphemy coming out of Justin's mouth. Do you know how it's pronounced? Is it Fandom or Fandome?
It's probably Fandome because it has an E.
Right. I'm just curious, like what?
But I don't know what it means.
Like Thunderdome.
Right. It's DC Fandome.
Hmm. Let's check it out. You know,
sure.
A couple of those aren't terrible.
Sure. I just don't know if it's going to be available on demand afterwards. Like if you have to watch it, and that's it, or if they're going to keep it archived.
I bet they would archive like the panels and stuff like that without maybe like the footage. Like maybe it's one of those things to where you have to watch it live to see the footage, sure. And then they'll archive, you know, like the Q&A portions.
Because I think Suicide Squad, I was under the impression that they finished principal photography for the new James Gunn one, right? So they'll have something to show for that, I'm sure. That'll be exciting.
It will be. I know you're looking forward to seeing what he's showing.
And, you know what? Here's the thing, Dave. I put on my Randy Van Dyke goggles, and I looked at the world a little bit differently, and I had just this urge to watch Suicide Squad, and I sat there through the entire thing, and I laughed a couple times, and I just kind of enjoyed it for what it was. And as I tweeted on Friday, it had crossed into guilty pleasure territory. That doesn't mean it's a good movie. That just means that I enjoyed my experience watching it. And I think that that is fair. I feel like Jaws 3D is in that same category. Freaking Sharknado is in that category. There's this level of horrible that allows you to enjoy things. And in this particular case, that is where I stand with Suicide Squad.
And I can respect that. I am a big fan of guilty pleasure films. Flash Gordon is one of my favorite films of all time. And it is... It is by no stretch of the imagination a tour de force. And yeah, I can agree with you on that. It's just too schizophrenic for me. You know, there's too many like just slow like when they first form and they're like walking before they discover what's going on and they're walking down the street. It just seems to go on forever. And yeah, it's just not for me. But I'm glad it's for you. I'm glad that you have found enjoyment in it because art is subjective. And my version of art should not be the same as yours, and it should not be the same as Randy's.
Sure. I don't know what it is. And there's this era that happened with films in the last like 10 years now where we were talking about this a couple years ago where the big bad is just a thing in the sky with a bunch of shit happening. And we got to stop the shit from falling in the sky. And it's kind of weird. It's sort of, I think it's trying to up the ante with end of the world, trying to give us a visual representation of what the end of the world is going to look like. Versus just the Bond villain going, yeah, see? And I don't think we need that in every movie. I don't need the sky is falling in every single movie.
We're already living through the end of the world right now. This is what it looks like. And there's no giant things in the sky. Right.
And it's so strange. Because, you know, in Suicide Squad, they get there and they're like, dude, what's all that shit in the sky? What's happening right now? And then, so they're not really killing people. They get converted into these weird sort of demon alien type guys, and I don't know, it's
you can
like
call them shitheads, that's what they look like.
Sure. And that's just a way to kill off, you know, hundreds of bad guys in a movie rather than them coming out of jail, killing humans, and then being heroes. I find that an interesting story technique, I suppose.
Yeah, I'm very curious for Suicide Squad 2. You know, James Gunn, I think.
I think it's called The Suicide Squad.
Oh, sorry, it's Batman vs Superman.
It's like Fast and Furious and The Fast and the Furious.
Yeah, so I'm curious how they're gonna write certain characters out, how they're gonna write certain characters in. You know, what involvement? You know, how they're gonna handle the Joker, how they're gonna handle, you know, Harley Quinn, how they're gonna handle, you know, Deadshot's departure. It's just, the first Suicide Squad very much ends with like this like familial atmosphere to where like these guys, you know, they got a little bit, they're still in jail, but they got some creature comforts and stuff like that. And that they're kind of a team now, and now we're not going to see that team.
Right. Yeah. We'll see. I mean, excuse me. Mr. Gunn is a very talented filmmaker, and I'm sure he'll make it work, as the other Gunn would say.
Yeah, in your just going with the flow, watching a Suicide Squad, did was Joker better in that mind frame?
No, I don't like him at all. I it's really odd to me. There is the part that I think is most Jokery is when he's at the club and he's so unpredictable that even the bad guys are afraid of him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's like, "Here, you can have Harley Quinn. You know, she's all yours." And the guy's like, "I don't want no beef." It's like, because he's scared. He's legitimately scared of what this man is going to do. And I thought that was a really, really good scene. There's this moment when I'm sure you guys remember when Joker pushes Harley off the edge of the scaffolding into the goo, the chemicals.
The boiling acid.
Yeah. Speaking of which, I think we're at like the 25-year anniversary for that movie. Batman Forever, that is. Anyway, Joker like has this look on his face like, "Oh fuck, I guess I better go get her." Like he has this weird doubt that I don't know if I've ever experienced in, you know, the amount of time that I've put into Batman comics, animated series, movies, and what have yous. That was the first time I ever really saw him kind of really second guess and regret what he just did.
Right. Yeah, I don't realize. I mean, I hate Leto's portrayal of Joker, but I like the world they built in both Suicide Squad and in Harley Quinn, that, you know, Joker is someone to be feared. Like, he mm-hmm. has no superpowers, but, like, you know, he should be feared. And especially in Harley Quinn, I really liked it. Once they were no longer together and this, like, imaginary shield of protection dropped, just like, everyone in the world wants to kill her. Like,
right.
Like, I've been waiting for years.
Which is funny because you would think that it wouldn't be permanent. Like they'd be like, well, maybe they're just having a fight. I really don't want to kill her. And then, you know, 2 years from now, Joker decide, you know what would have been really cool right now? Harley Quinn sitting on my face. I'm going to go murder the guy that killed her. You know what I mean? I don't know. Yeah. It just seems kind of... I wouldn't touch that with like a 39.5-foot pole. I'd be like, you know what? Who cares? It's temporary.
Right.
I wouldn't take either of their words for it. I would just assume that it was temporary.
Randy loves the Suicide Squad. He watches it when he brushes his teeth.
They won Academy Awards.
No, don't put an S on that. It won an Academy Award. No.
Well, singular.
I'm sure multiple statues were handed out.
Well, okay, I will say this about Suicide Squad. I only saw it once in the theater when it came out. I didn't particularly love it, but I didn't hate it. And when the inevitable director's cut is released and we have more Leto being the Joker that he intended the world to see, I will watch it again. But until then, I can live without it.
Sure.
Because, I mean, that's basically the whole air cut. It's the Joker was in this movie a ton, and he was scrapped significantly from the film. And so the air cut is just like 35 more minutes of Joker. That'd be like the Zack Snyder cut of Man of Steel having like 35 more minutes of Lex Luthor.
Ugh.
No.
I wouldn't like that. Oh, that reminds me though. I did watch Social Network on Saturday since this will be now the third podcast in a row where we've talked about that movie. I was like, fuck, I guess I gotta watch it again because it's been 10 years now. That Zuckerberg, he's a real piece.
Yeah, it's funny because we had recommended to Randy to watch Steve Jobs, and so I was going through like HBO, you know, HBO Now, or HBO Max, and I saw that Jobs is on there, you know, the Ashton Kutcher version of Steve Jobs from like a couple years ago, and I'm like, oh, I'm going to check this out, and yeah, it's not very good.
Yeah, that's too bad. You know, it's great. I think it's on Prime, because I know I just watched it recently, the Fassbender one.
Yeah, it's on Netflix.
Oh, it is on. Okay, no, I watched it on something recently. Yeah, that's so good. I love that movie.
Yes, now we're just waiting for Sorkin to do the third movie in his trilogy of tech billionaires, but we don't know who it's going to be on yet. I guess he's been approached by the same author who wrote The Social Network to do a follow-up that would deal a lot with, you know, the current scandals in Facebook, you know, like the, it's not Acumatica. It was this. It doesn't matter. It would be interesting to see, you know, the current state of Facebook as this global powerhouse.
Sure. Which is fascinating when you're watching Social Network and how he doesn't want to do ads because ads aren't cool. And now it is one giant billboard that is broadcasted to 7 continents and, you know, billions of people all at once.
Right.
That is fascinating.
Yeah, he lost his exclusivity, which was the big selling point, and, you know, not putting ads in there, but not their ads.
But I mean, when your initial public offering is probably upwards of like what a couple billion dollars? What was it, like $100 million, like in like a second kind of thing?
Yeah, it ended up being like $1.48 billion.
Yeah, that's a lot.
And it was under expectations, I guess.
Was it really?
Yeah, it was supposed to be like 1.52. It was like right under, but everyone's like, oh, look at that.
Oh shit.
Fuck Zuckerberg.
Yeah. You know, it's... Oh, I am not a fan of the Facebook, and I'm glad that I do not have... short of an account with one friend to be able to post stuff for work when it comes to ads and things of that nature. I don't use it for personal use by any stretch of the imagination. I do the Insta, I do the Twitter, and that is enough for me. I don't want to give Mr. Zuckerberg any of my time or energy.
Yeah, for me it's more being able to keep up with family. You know, a lot of us have small kids and stuff like that, so it's a great place for us to publish, you know, hey, look at our kids, look at our dogs, look at our lives, you know.
Yeah.
So I can get a snapshot of everybody.
Sure. I call my friends and family. I'm like, hey, how's it going?
Yeah, I do too.
Tell me about your kids.
I want pictures.
I don't need pictures. I look at goats. I look at goats.
Oh.
And llamas.
I look at cats.
Yeah, Randy's just a cat guy. Who knew?
I'm just here for the P word. And that means cats in this case.
Man. Let's see. On our, I think it was on our return episode, we touched base on several films that were delayed due to the coronavirus. I saw a couple of updates come through the pipeline, and I just want to kind of go through rapid fire really fast. Fast and Furious 9 is now coming out on April 2021. No Time to Die is November of 2020. Mulan, that was right around the time of the world ending, and that is actually still a summer release. As of right now, we're looking at July 24th. Quiet Place 2, that actually was supposed to come out the week that we all started working from home when we went to quarantine. So that was originally a March release, which is now a September release. New Mutants, David's favorite movie of all time, which has been delayed at least six times, is now looking at an August 2020 release. Black Widow sort of caused a trigger effect. That was originally an April release and turned into a November 2020, which took the Eternal spot, which then took the Shang-Chi, the Legends of the Ten Rings spot, which then took the Doctor Strange spot, which that took the Thor spot. Black Panther 2 still gets to keep its spot. And then there is Captain Marvel 2. So that is going to take us from 2020 all the way to summer of 2022.
Yeah, there's going to be five Marvel movies in 2021. Is it 2021 or 2022? Which
2021 has the Eternals in February. It has Shang-Chi in May. It has Doctor Strange in November. Then it has Thor in 2022 in February. Then it has Black Panther.
In June or something, right?
Sort of. Black Panther 2 is in May, and then Captain Marvel 2 is in July. So everything kind of got shuffled a little bit. I think originally you were looking at that sort of lineup, but with Black Widow botching it for everyone, that kind of changed. Hmm. And then Spiral, which was that new Saw movie with Chris Rock, that is got a whole year delay. That was supposed to come out in May, and now it's May 2021. The Purge 5 doesn't even have a new release date. That was going to be a summer release of July. Wonder Woman has gone through a couple of changes now. It was June 5th, went to August 14th, and now it's October 2nd. Top Gun Maverick was June. Now it is Christmas. Ghostbusters Afterlife, that was one that we were looking forward to, was originally July for this summer, and now it is March of 2021. And then our good buddy Jared Leto with Morbius, that was July, and now it is going to be March of next year. That's a big shakeup. And honestly, still a gamble, if you ask me. With all these places reopening and now that we're seeing rises on coronavirus, I think that it is still way too early to tell on how this is all going to play out.
But yeah, I think Tenet's going to be like the benchmark. If Tenet, because it's the first big release that's going to come out. If nobody
which is end of
that,
July now, I think. I think it's July 27th.
I think it's July 17th?
They pushed it back like 2 weeks or something like that.
Oh, okay. Because it was supposed to come out the week before Mulan. So I wonder if Mulan is now the first one that's going to come out in July then. Whichever one of those is the first one, if that totally just tanks, I could see everyone else being like, okay, now's not the time. Let's pump the brakes.
Yeah. We shall see.
We shall see.
They will be here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Tenet got delayed to the end of July now.
Yeah, it's July 31st.
Yeah. They're going to play Interstellar instead on that release day to celebrate 10 years.
Was it extra scenes or was it...
I really don't know.
Is it Interstellar or Inception?
Or Inception, that's what it was. Inception, yeah. Yeah, yeah. That came out just before I moved to Seattle. Yeah, 2010. And then Inception was like 2015 or whatever.
Yeah.
Or I'm sorry, Interstellar was like 2015.
Mulan is 2020. Not 2020. July 24th. So it kept its release date. So it will be the first big release to be go to the theater. So
sure,
will be interesting. I mean, it may be really good just because people want to go back to the theaters. But I think a lot of people are.
I mean, I want to go, but I don't. I won't. Right. I'm just gonna be like, fuck it. I'm good.
I don't know. From the this pure amount of people that, or at least from what it looks like, the people that are itchy and antsy and wanting to get out and get back to things as normal that I see on social media, it sounds like they're going to be making plenty of money once they start opening up those theaters and running first run tentpole movies.
Right. It's not going to have that many movies. That's going to, I think, be the problem.
Fair enough. Hell, it would be a good opportunity to take some stuff that's maybe available on streaming and just throw it up there for the kids that want to get out of the house. Stuff that was cut short, like Onward or the fucking Trolls movie that made the big fuss.
Right.
That kind of thing. Give it a limited theatrical just to have stuff playing. Or, you know, try to get some classic movies up on the big screen just to give people the experience to get out of the house and go see something.
Yeah, those classic movie ones are always fun. Yeah. I love going back to the theater to rewatch something that came out, whatever, either before I was born or a movie that I really enjoyed when it came out.
Yeah, honestly, no matter how good your home entertainment system is, it's not theatrical good in terms of sound and clarity and everything, and just the experience.
Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think, you know, with the restrictions, you know, movie theaters are going to be hurting, you know, just because, you know, you can only have, you know, at most half full. So we'll have to see what the experience is like.
They got to commission George Lucas to edit the Star Wars movies even further and re-release them.
Yeah.
Now we're talking. Oh, man. Speaking of fun movies... I came across this really remarkable list on IGN.com that it was movies with 0% scores on Rotten Tomatoes. And in the vein of Suicide Squad and, you know, I had mentioned Jaws 3D and just sort of just horrible movies that are so fun to watch. I thought it would be fun to just kind of maybe pick apart this list a little bit. We don't have to go through all of them, but I'm just curious if you have any on here that maybe stand out to you that you actually really enjoy. You can stop me whenever you like. First one on the list is Staying Alive, 1983. That was the follow-up to Saturday Night Fever.
It's not good.
Wasn't good. Stallone has a cameo in it. He bumps into Travolta on the street.
Well, he directed it.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I was getting to that.
Oh,
okay. How do they even get a zero? How does that work? Does that mean nobody has rated it favorably on Rotten Tomatoes?
Guess not.
Wow.
I didn't know there were zero score Rotten Tomato films.
So pretty much if one of these films is something that you actually happen to like and enjoy, then you are the complete minority in the situation.
There you go.
So what you need to do is go write a positive review for it, Randy.
There you go. Take it out of the zero club. Sorry, I derailed us once again. Continue, good stuff.
That's all right. Jaws the Revenge, 1987. This is the movie that Michael Caine says it got me a house. So he's okay with it.
I wouldn't say it's a zero. I mean, it's not good, but it's not like terrible.
This time it's extra super mega personal.
Yeah.
It's always this time it's personal. Police Academy 4, Citizens on Patrol. This movie's terrible. This is one of the worst Police Academy movies ever made.
Hands down.
It sucks. 2 is the best. I would say 2, 1, 3, then 4. No, I take that back. I would say, not counting like Mission to Moscow and all those other ones, or even Police Academy 6, City Under Siege, that one was terrible. But like, I would say 2, 1, 3, 5, then 4. And 5 doesn't even have Mahoney.
No Mahoney means instantly bottom of the list.
Yeah, 4 is the last one with Mahoney in it. Is this one where they just recruit like the randos?
Yeah. David Spade's one of the randos.
David Spade, yeah.
I kind of remember liking this one. I haven't seen it since I was a kid.
I like Citizens on Patrol.
It sucks.
I remember
Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
I remember the theme for it.
There's this one part where they're trying to scare the new recruits and they're pretending that like Hightower is dead or something like that. He's in a body bag. Or he's doing like the voodoo man. And there's a guy, he's just doing things like, and I sing that all the time.
So bad, dude.
It's the best.
That movie's terrible.
But I would agree with you with your assessment. I think that I like 2 and 3 the best. I would go 2, 3, 2, 3, 1, 4.
There you go.
And then 5, 6, 7 in the order they were released.
2 is so good.
It is.
Absolutely love 2. Mac and Me, 1988. Terrible.
I like that because Paul Rudd always goes on the Conan show.
Yeah, when he's got to like pimp out a new movie, he just always shows that clip of them like going down the hill or whatever.
Here we go, man.
Oh, geez. Problem Child, 1990. This movie actually got a sequel, too. John Ritter, who was brilliant. Man was amazing at physical comedy. Definitely miss that man.
The movie was good. And wasn't there like a questionable scene in it where he's wearing like a glow-in-the-dark condom and they have a lightsaber fight in the dark, him and another guy?
No, that's Skin Deep.
Yeah.
That's
a movie. There's no kids in that one.
I'm sorry. You're mixing
your Ritter films.
She's also in Stay Tuned, which is a really good movie, too.
Oh, I love Stay Tuned. That better not be on this list.
It's not. Highlander 2, The Quickening.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
That movie is terrible. I remember, I think I went to go see, was Beauty and the Beast the cartoon, the animated movie with Disney? Was that 1991?
Sounds about right. Around that time.
So I feel like that was the movie. I went to go see that at the Chinese Theater in Hollywood, and across the street was Highlander 2, The Quickening. It was playing in theaters at the same time. That's probably why I didn't make a lot of money. Going against Beauty and the Beast. we'll say that. How about that? Yeah. Let's see. Return to the Blue Lagoon, 1991. Terrible.
Not the best. Mila Jovovich.
Skipping. Look Who's Talking Now, 1993. Which is interesting because 1 year later, John Travolta would go on to do Pulp Fiction. And it resurged his career to the point where he's in 58 movies between 1994 and like 1998.
Real quick, we skipped over Folks, and I may be the only person who's seen it, but it's actually a very sweet movie. It's where Tom Selleck's dad has to come move in with him, and he used to own this like shoe shop, and he has dementia and stuff like that. And the whole movie, this guy's like, McDonald's. He's like, God damn, you like these hamburgers? So he keeps taking the McDonald's. At the very end, you realize he was trying to say McDonnell Douglas because he had like $1 million worth of McDonnell Douglas shares. But it's a pretty sweet movie.
Oh. Does Tom Selleck get the shares?
It's at the very, very end. And like, he shows him like McDonald's. He's like, this is what you meant? And then they're all excited and they're a happy family.
Oh.
It's fun.
Well, there you go.
But Look Who's Talking Now is the one with the dogs, right?
Oh, yeah. Okay, so there's one in the trilogy.
Yeah. Two, they have the girl. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, with Roseanne.
Yeah. And who was the first one? Was it like Bruce Willis or something like that?
Yeah. Yeah.
First one.
I remember that. Yeah, I saw the first one.
The opening scene where he's like looking down at his dick. He's like, well, how am I going to get... Oh, look, another hand. How am I going to get that one in my mouth?
Yeah. It's pretty bad. Lowdown Dirty Shame, 1994. Keenan Ivory Wayne wrote and directed and starred.
Probably the catering and the set dressing. And
yeah, you know, I meant to bring up catering earlier when we were talking about might have even been off the
off air.
Yeah, we were talking about just the overall experience with safety and spending more money and insurance companies when it comes to filmmaking and the new Jurassic World movie ultimately was spending getting $5 million in insurance. That was
an additional, you're either spending an additional $5 million for insurance or getting a policy, like raising it an additional $5 million. And that's just to cover anybody possibly getting sick. Not to mention the fact that they installed something like 150 hand sanitizer stations around their set, which is wild. But yeah, to talk about the food aspect of things and catering and that kind of thing, like normally if you're working on like TV or movie or whatever, they have what's called craft services, and that's usually kind of like a buffet table of just stuff set out that you can snacks and things that you can graze on throughout the day, and it's usually just like open big bowls of stuff or little individual pre-wrapped containers. But now everything's going to have to come pre-packaged. Lunch, instead of like having kind of a buffet line of serving everybody slop like you would the old high school cafeteria at lunchtime on a movie set. Now everything's going to have to come pre-packaged from whatever source it was cooked at. And there's a good chance it might even have to be served by a food handling professional, you know, like a card-carrying server type.
Right.
That and all of this equals spending more money per person per, you know, per meal. So it's making the cost of filmmaking go up with all these additional safety precautions.
Right. So it was Universal spending $5 million on new on-set safety protocols.
Okay.
Yeah, that's crazy. Speaking of food handler licenses, I had one of those.
Did you?
Yeah,
I had quite the segue.
I had to sit through like this 8-hour course only because I was, you know, a manager at Target, and in the event that, let's say, someone from my food avenue just up and quit or called out sick, and someone had to have whatever popcorn or a hot dog or something, I had to know about food temps.
You need a hot dog, man.
Yeah. You know, and one, you know, fun story, in all the years that I was there, I had to serve one person. And that was because the kid that was running the counter was so mad at the guest that he wouldn't serve him because the guy threw his money at him. And, well, he said that he threw the money at him. I later watched the tape, and he just put it on the counter. But it was so fun. This kid was prepared to die on this hill and lose his job because he was so mad at this guest that he wouldn't serve him. So I just went behind the counter, threw on an apron really fast, washed my hands, and then served him. But it was kind of, I was like, do you take a break, dude? Like, just go back there and hang out. It was so funny. I was so blown away of by what was happening that I wasn't even mad. I was like, yeah, just go hang out in the back for a minute. I got this. I can do your easy job.
Right.
So how long does that food handling license last for? Does it expire?
I thought I remember it being like 5 years. So I don't even know if it's a state-to-state thing or what, but I would need to redo my test by now.
Gotcha. Okay.
Which I'm not going to do.
Like, I'm done slinging wieners.
Yeah, that ship has sailed.
Well, we're never done slinging wieners.
Yeah.
True.
Fair statement. Of which, I really love that gif of the lady with, like, getting hit with, like, 20 hot dogs on her face. Have you ever seen that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's remarkable.
It's like, who said yes to having a whole package of hot dogs thrown at their head?
It's for the gram, man. It's for the gram.
Yeah. Let's see here. Wagons East. This was one of John Candy's last films.
Sad.
Yeah, it wasn't good either, which was sad. Which is interesting because it has Richard Lewis, who is super funny, and John Candy, who is one of my favorite comedian actors of all time. And it was not good.
I haven't seen it only because I haven't brought myself to see it because I know it's not particularly good, and I really, really love John Candy. So it's like a hard thing for me. Mm-hmm. It's like, as long as I don't watch it, I know there's at least one movie that I could still, there's like one new performance of his that I haven't had a chance to consume yet. Right. So I'll keep not watching it because of that. But I heard, and correct me if I'm wrong, that he actually died during production on this. And they actually had to kind of write around the stuff he wasn't around for.
I remember hearing it that way too, because the movie came out shortly after he died. But I thought I remember reading that they were still in production. And he was super unhealthy. When you look at him, you know, he's the biggest he's ever been. He's a sweaty mess, and he just looks like a wheezing heart attack waiting to die. And it's really, really sad. And I realize that they're in the desert when they're filming this, so it's obviously hot. But, you know, we have all been big in our lives, and we know when it's hot outside, we sweat like crazy because, you know, we're wearing skin as coats, right? And it's ridiculous. And it is painful to watch him in these scenes because he looks miserable.
Yeah, I did this around this and Canadian Bacon came out like the same year.
Same
and,
time, yeah.
Yeah, neither one were very good, but at least Canadian Bacon had kind of a humorous premise.
Right.
That's where it was just, we're done, we're going back east.
Right. The whole idea was settlers were going out west. These settlers didn't like it out west, so they're like, fuck it, we're going back east. Take us back home. Shadow Conspiracy. I never even heard of this movie. Charlie Sheen, Donald Sutherland, and Linda Hamilton. Have you guys heard of this movie?
It's got a pretty good cast.
1997. No. Never heard of it. Plot to assassinate the president. Simon Says, 1999.
Yeah,
with Rodman. Dennis Rodman. Never saw
it. I like the description where it's like, blah, 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 blah. To rescue a kidnapped girl with the help of some dancing cyber monks.
Oh, shit.
I don't even know what that means, but I'm curious, I'll admit.
Anything cyber is cool.
Right. Yeah.
Let's see here. Ballistic, X versus Sever. Have you seen that?
Yeah. This was clearly the very first failed cinematic universe. You know, it was very clear that they were trying to set up like the Ballistic franchise. And this was just going to be the first one in this never-ending train of just amazing movies. And it was not good. It had an amazing cast again, but it wasn't very good.
Yeah, I only saw it once. I barely remember it. But it was Antonio Banderas and Lucy Liu. What was the other movie that had like Christian Bale?
No,
the one that was like Christian Bale where they like curved bullets and stuff. Kind of like Wanted, but...
Extends or...
I don't remember what it's called.
It's EX something.
Yeah, look it up.
Christian Bale.
Get back to me on that one. Let's see here. Derailed, 2002. Jean-Claude Van Damme. Direct to DVD. How sad.
Your favorite?
Yeah. Let's see here. Merci, Dr. Ray, 2002. Let's see here. A feeble French farce featuring pointless characters and cringeworthy sight gags.
Going back to curved bullets, there's a movie called Wanted.
Yeah, I know that one. That's one with James McAvoy and
Angelina Jolie.
And
Chris Pratt.
Yes. I forgot he's in it. He's like his desk mate or whatever. Like, yeah, cheats on his girlfriend.
He's banging his wife. Equilibrium is the movie you were looking for.
That's it. Equilibrium. Who is the other star in that movie? Is it like a Sean Bean or something?
Sounds like a Sean Bean type movie.
Right.
Tay Diggs.
Oh, I like Tay Diggs.
Yeah, Sean Bean is in fact in it.
All right.
But the poster is Christian Bale and Tay Diggs.
Okay. Yeah, I saw that one once too. And for all I know, they were the same movie. Ballistic, and because they're not quite around, somewhere around the same time, right? When was that movie?
This one's 02.
Okay, so they're both in 02. Yeah. Yeah, see, that's like Golden Compass and that other movie that I always confuse.
Stardust.
Yeah, they're like, I saw trailers at the same time, and I was convinced it was the same movie.
Right.
Like, what's that movie with Nicole Kidman and a pocket watch and Claire Danes falls from the sky and then they ride polar bears together? What's that one called? You guys are like, are you stroking out? What are you talking about?
Look, I can just make up words too.
Yeah. Super Babies. Baby Geniuses 2. This is like Toddler and Tiara territory. I feel like if you want to have your child who is a toddler be in a movie like this and be some star, then you have a problem. The parent has a problem. I think this is like exploitation territory. I don't like it.
Yeah, I agree. Having worked with child actors before, I have no illusion that any stage mom wouldn't be like, oh, you want to throw them down the hill? That's fine. They'll be fine. They'll bounce back.
Right. Right. Like in the Sacha Baron Cohen movie was it like Bruno? Was that the one that it was?
It was Bruno,
Yeah, he's like, what if we just, you know, we want to cover them with bees? Like, oh, yeah, no problem. Do you think your child can lose like 20 pounds in the next 2 weeks? Shit like that. Parents are the worst.
Stage moms are the worst, or stage parents. Go. I'm sure there are stage dads that are just as bad.
Yeah, like I know you don't really like the movie, but in the movie Magnolia, one of the kids, he is like boy genius, right? And he's going on this game show, and his father is putting so much pressure on him to be successful because he's kind of a deadbeat, and he just needs
He wants the money.
He wants the money, Lebowski.
Yeah. But I think that's all I really care to talk about on this list.
I thought there was one other one.
Bucky Larson, did you see that?
I saw Bucky Larson with Nick Schwartzman.
Yeah, I love that guy. He's so funny, but I guess the movie wasn't good.
He's funny. So there's a new, I don't know if you guys have seen the new David Spade movie on Netflix called The Wrong Missy. I think I talked about it on a previous podcast. It's actually pretty hysterical. And so Nick Schwartzman plays like the HR guy at the place where David Spade works at. And so because David Spade has a company phone, he's always like spying on him and stuff like that. So he's like checking his text messages for him and stuff like that. And he's always talking to him. It's super funny. It's actually a really fun movie. So The Wrong Missy on Netflix starring David Spade.
I will check it out.
It is worth checking out.
I like the David Spade.
Yeah. And he's funny in it. Some of these movies I'm like, I mean, 1,000 words, Eddie Murphy movies, it's terrible.
Did you see Dark Crimes, this Jim Carrey movie?
No, he looks
looks gross. Yeah, as one of Jim Carrey, it says here, as one of Jim Carrey's more pointedly misguided forays into gritty drama, Dark Crimes was about a detective investigating a murder who comes to realize his case holds similarities to a published mystery book. I feel like Basic Instinct was that movie too.
Yeah, I'm trying to see if is this a Kaufman story.
It says it tried to copy the gruesome appeal of True Detective, but instead was labeled the misogynistic and depressing. So you can be one of those, but you can't be both, or you'll get a zero on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, I guess not.
That's too bad.
The verdict, although inspired by an interesting postmodern true crime story and featuring an unexpectedly depressive performance from Jim Carrey, Dark Crimes is a dull, dark, depressing film with very little on its mind.
Oh, man.
Yikes.
That's too bad.
Yeah, I never even heard of it. The only other one I think I've seen that we haven't talked about on the film, it was Max Steel. It was a kid's movie, and it was terrible. And then Gotti from 2018. We talked about that.
Oh, with Travolta?
Yeah, we talked about that a long time ago on one of our old podcasts. That was one of the ones that was going to be, there was a...
like the O.J. Simpson type thing, right? Wasn't it like a docuseries, but not really?
No, so it was MoviePass was pushing it. It was back in the days of MoviePass. And they were writing all of these fake reviews on Rotten Tomatoes. So that's why I'm surprised that it's got a zero, because they must, unless they just removed all of the other reviews, because it was for a long time like trending as like one of like the best reviewed movies of the year, but it was all fake.
Oh, that's too bad.
It was MoviePass got caught with their hand in the cookie jar.
Can't do that.
No, but other people want cookies.
Those are my cookies.
Yeah, Randy wants his cookies.
Damn right I do.
It's funny. I can't scroll to the bottom of this. Every time I try to scroll past, those last couple movies in 2018, like the list like freaks out on me and it resets the whole page.
So. It broke. I already closed it out. I apologize. Otherwise, I would see what was there.
That's okay. I'm trying one more time.
Yeah, I try not to. I try not to be too hard on movies. There are some that I just don't enjoy and I don't ever want to watch again. And I tend to forget the name of the movie. I had watched one that had Henry Cavill and Ben Kingsley, and it was kind of new. I think Alexandra Daddario might have been in it too, and it's like Hunter or something. I don't remember, but I needed a movie to watch, and it was like a Friday night, and it was so bad, and I wanted it to be over, but I couldn't just cancel it because I felt like I like all the people in this movie, so I gotta support them. I gotta watch it, and I was angry when it was over.
Right, you're talking about Night Hunter.
That's it. Yeah. That's the movie. Not good.
So I watched it because it had Stanley Tucci, had Minka Kelly for Friday Night Lights, and had Nathan Fillion, and then obviously had Henry Cavill. Henry Cavill, who I love. So you would think with a cast like that, it would have been a better film.
Right? And it's terrible. It's so bad.
Yeah.
It's the worst.
Yeah. Oh. Lord Ben, Sir Ben Kingsley.
Yeah. It is not good.
Do you think Cavill plays Superman again in the Abrams DC universe?
I hope so. I think I was talking about this on great length after my Suicide Squad post. I woke up to like 30 notifications on my phone, and it was all talk about DC and what they're doing and what they're doing wrong, and I was getting in trouble a lot. And I think that a less is more approach would work very, very well with Superman, to where he can just show up, save the day, be amazing, and then fly off screen. But given today's climate and social injustices, I think that we could use a standalone Superman movie right now. Just like in the same way that after 9/11, we had a Spider-Man movie and New York got their hero, and it was perfect. Everyone loved it and needed it and wanted to watch it, and it had this healing power to it. I think that Superman is the greatest hero of all time, and that he could do the same thing if done right.
I think the amount of Superman that we got at the end of Shazam is just the right amount of Superman.
You know, where we don't see his face, he just sees his chest. I think it's going to be.
I was just going to say I'm teasing, but go ahead.
I think it's going to be interesting because the rumors are that Abrams wants to not only bring Cavill back as Superman, he wants to bring Affleck back as Batman. And you know, if rumors are true of the creative differences between Affleck and Johns and Snyder going into like what became the Batman. It would be interesting to see if, you know, Abrams could sway him back over, even if it's just, you know, like a one-off cameo or something like that. You know, I'm definitely down for more Batfleck. I'm definitely down for more Cavill as Superman. So if Abrams can make it happen, you know, I can almost forgive some of his past transgressions.
Have you guys heard any rumblings about Man of Steel 2? Just this past week, I've been seeing more and more people talking about the possibility of Cavill returning in Man of Steel 2.
Yeah, sure. I think it's going to be, if that Snyder cut hits huge, like, you know, it looks like it may, I think we'll see more rumblings for Man of Steel 2. I think it's easier to do Man of Steel 2 because they have not recast Superman like they recast Batman. But I would be down for more Henry Cavill as Superman. I would be even more down if Abrams brings it under Bad Robot and you know, brings on someone else to direct it.
Sure. I just don't... I mean, Matt Reeves makes some pretty good movies, and I find it remarkable that they couldn't find a way to make it work with Ben Affleck.
Well, I think Affleck wanted to direct it.
Yeah, and I don't know why that doesn't work. I mean, from Warner Brothers' point of view, the man is one, you know, he's a amazing filmmaker. You know, The Town and Argo.
Well, he has an Academy Award for writing films, for directing films, and producing films.
Yeah, he knows what he's doing. But whatever. I mean, stranger things have happened. But I mean, let's pretend for a second that J.J. Abrams takes this on in some capacity, and it's a Bad Robot movie. But you say for him not to direct it. You know who is one of my favorite action directors these days is Matthew Vaughn. I think he could also make an incredible Batman movie.
I'd be down for that, and that could be a lot of fun. I'm assuming that Warner Brothers just wanted a young Batman, because that was really the only complaint people had against Affleck, was that he was an older Batman, and that's why they went so young with Pattinson. But you know, that might be too young.
Well, and Pattinson isn't even that young to begin with. He's like 30.
He's in his 30s now. Yeah. I mean, he's like Michael Keaton territory, right?
Yeah.
Which is crazy when you think about it, because Michael Keaton at that age just looked infinitely different than Robert Pattinson does at the same age. You know?
Isn't that crazy how that works?
And this is assuming they're similar in age. They could be a decade off. I don't know. From their respective turns playing Batman. But people age different these days.
They do. It's all in the diet.
But I mean, so, the Batman cast is just stacked. Like,
yeah, you know, there's a billion people.
You got Pattinson as Bruce Wayne. You got Colin Farrell as the Penguin. You got Zoe Kravitz as Selina Kyle. You got Andy Serkis as Alfred. You got Paul Dano. You got, you know, Peter Skarsgård. You got John Turturro. You got Jeffrey Wright as James Gordon. That's pretty awesome. So,
so Michael Keaton was 38.
Okay.
Just so you know.
And so our Pats. our Pats, who plays the Bats, was born in 86, so he's 24.
34.
34, that's what I meant to say. We're not in 2010?
No. We were in the twilight days. But, I mean, yeah, there's not much of a difference between 34 and 38.
No.
I mean Affleck. I could be Batman. I am now Michael Keaton age, so I could do it. I could be one of the fan Batmans, one of the ones in hockey pads.
Exactly.
Let's go film it tonight.
I could do it.
All right, I got the camera all set up and ready.
Can we trust him?
It could be a solo Bat movie. I don't have to fight anybody because of social distancing. I can just cruise around in my Batmobile, rocking out to some Tim Burton, and it'll be amazing. Good stuff.
I still love the Batman 89 score. That for me is the definitive Batman theme. Yeah, it was used in the animated series. They even reprised it in Justice League. They brought back Sweets, the old 89 Batman, and dude, there is nothing finer as far as any kind of superhero theme.
See, for me, it's the Superman theme.
Okay. On par with Superman. I'll agree with you there.
It just gets me all tingly in my loins. I can't take it. It's so good. It brings a tear to my eye. What's that?
I totally hear you. But did you notice that they also brought that back in Justice League? They were really trying to milk that nostalgia, and for me it worked. But
when he's in the black and he's fighting all of his Justice League friends and he's staying up against like that statue or whatever, you hear the undertones of it and everything. It's really cool.
Yeah, and Greg Fraser is the one who's going to be shooting the Batman. He's got some pretty good credits too. He's the one filming Dune with Villeneuve right now. He shot Rogue One. You know, he shot Foxcatcher. He shot Vice.
I never saw Foxcatcher. That's the one with the DuPont wrestler guy, right?
Yeah, with Steve Carell.
Yeah, holy shit. Taylor. I watched a documentary on that. Blew me away. Because I was a kid, right? So it didn't mean anything to me at the time. But how he was like held up in the house with like a gun. And he's like, you guys aren't coming to get me. And he was like so hell-bent on being a wrestler and an Olympian that he's like trying to compete and they're like letting him win because he's like 70 years old. They're like, yeah, whatever, man. Just let him win.
Let him stay here for free and stuff. There's a great 30 for 30, ESPN 30 for 30 on the whole Foxcatcher thing. And it's incredible. I would say it's better than Foxcatcher, the movie. But Foxcatcher is really good as well.
I have to check it out. It blew me away. I was so surprised that this was something that happened.
Yeah.
I was like, who are these crazy people?
Yeah, he kills that wrestler. And
and Ruffalo plays that character, right? Yeah,
it's Ruffalo and Channing Tatum. They're brothers.
Right.
And it's about Steve Carell like kind of grooming one and like kind of driving a wedge between the two of them and stuff.
Right. That's what he does. Yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy.
One of them is like legitimately the best wrestler in the world. And he creates this Foxcatcher place, and that's where he trains all these Olympians. So that, like,
it's like a compound, right? It's like they all have cabins, and their families are staying there, and it's a whole big to do, and then drama.
Yeah, crazy. And then the one brother's like, "This guy's gonna go off the deep end. I'm gonna get out of here." And the other brother's like, "Oh no, man, we're almost to the Olympics. Gotta just hand it out." And he's like, "All right, dude. Well, hopefully it all works out." And spoiler alert, it doesn't.
Yeah, that's too bad.
Yeah. Kind of sad. Like Rogue One and like Vice. Like everything he shoots. He also shot 3 episodes of The Mandalorian.
He shot Rogue One? Same day?
Yeah, he shot Rogue One.
Yeah.
Rogue One, Vice.
Some people think she has two.
Yeah.
Batman joke for you. Alexander Knox. He is the greatest. And he was in the Arrowverse thing that they did, right? Like the super mega crossover event? Mm-hmm. Yeah, Robert Wool. That's great. Man. Oh, fun fact. Our buddy Matthew Vaughn, he was a producer on Stardust.
He directed it.
He directed it, too. How about that? Yeah.
That's because he directed it.
2007, yeah.
That was like his first big thing.
Holy shit. The more you know. You're the Star. And Kick-Ass? Holy shit. Yeah, I like that guy. Right, in the Kingsman movies? He's going places.
Yeah, he makes action interesting. You know, like, everyone can just set the camera down and have just, like, shaky cam footage and stuff like that, you know. He's real good about, like, the geography and the style of the fight. And
I think the church scene in Kingsman is one of the coolest action scenes I've seen in my lifetime.
I will wholeheartedly agree with you on that one. Love it.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good.
It's pretty good. Like, Goldberg's just beating the shit out of every man, woman, and child in that building. That's cool. Blew me away. I was like, holy shit, and the music's playing. Love it. and at the end of the movie, we get Casey and the Sunshine Band, which is just amazing. Used to be like 30 people in that band. Now it's like a dude and two chicks.
Maybe a tambourine.
Yeah, maybe. We shall see. Anyway, I think that's all I have. Dave, you want to take us out?
Sure. Thank you guys for joining us for another great episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast, where we take you on the wild ride of tangents and sidebars. And, you know, we gave you a little bit of information in the movie scene, but there's not a lot going on there. So hopefully you enjoyed the ride. But make sure you follow us on all our social platforms at Geek Legacy, on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook. And, you know, make sure you listen to the other podcasts in the network. You know, we got the Pixelated Podcast with Justin and Stephen K. James. We got the Don't Be Crazy Podcast, also with Justin and with our good buddy Zach. So, you know, we're talking about movies. We talk about movies. The other one talks about games. If you like movies, games, we're your place to be. So, join us.
Or die.
Or die. Thank you so much.